Are you interested in understanding GLP-1 medications like Ozempic, Wegovy, or Mounjaro? Then join us on The Plus Sides, Cracking the Obesity Code, the groundbreaking podcast helping people change their lives one episode at a time. The Plus Sides podcast is a disruptor. We're breaking down barriers, smashing stereotypes, and sharing inspiring stories that'll leave you feeling informed and empowered. Join us every week to learn from doctors who are specialists around GLP-1 medications like Ozempic, Wegovy, or Mounjaro. They'll provide you with science and facts to validate these incredible stories. But that's not all. We'll also bring you the voices of the GLP-1 Mounjaro TikTok community, real people who face the challenges of obesity-related diseases and disorders and discovered the incredible plus sides of GLP-1 medications. Our episodes are filled with heartwarming stories, laughter, and moments of triumph. You'll connect with our amazing community members who are reclaiming their health and experiencing their fullest lives. Are you ready to embark on a journey of discovery and empowerment? Tune in to The Plus Sides, Cracking the Obesity Code, and together we'll change the narrative around obesity and end the stigma. Subscribe now on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform and join our incredible community. Let's celebrate the plus sides of life together. The Plus Sides Podcast, because every story deserves to be heard, every life deserves to shine, and everyone deserves access to expert knowledge and medication. The Plus Sides Podcast, you're not alone. It's not
time for a change rooted in lasting, evidence-backed wellness. Say goodbye to unsustainable diet culture with Friday's Weight Management Program, a nationwide virtual care platform built to address your biology.
The reason why I started Fridays is that I noticed that patients with obesity are often improperly treated and told to eat less and move more. Well, the science is in, and we now know that obesity is a chronic medical condition like high blood pressure and diabetes, and that there are many factors, including your genetics, that play a role in the development of obesity. We understand this at Fridays, and that's why we make sure to order labs and specific medications that work with you and your biology.
We're revolutionizing weight management, steering clear of weight loss fads, and embracing a scientifically driven approach. Our program charts a path to a healthier you, leveraging evidence-based treatments, nutritional support, and a team of specialized clinicians dedicated to guiding you towards optimal health. We ensure swift appointment scheduling and provide a knowledgeable insurance team for handling prior authorizations for GLP-1 medication. Fridays will also provide safe, compounded GLP-1 medication alternatives with fair and industry-leading pricing. Our eligibility quiz will match you with the provider that corresponds with your medical needs. Go to joinfridays.com to begin your journey to a healthier you today.
To restrictive weight loss methods, and hello to Iveem, the number one prescriber of GLP-1 medications. GLP-1s curb cravings, stabilize blood sugar, increase energy, and balance A1C levels to regulate your body and kickstart your weight loss journey. Iveem is committed to making medical weight loss accessible, affordable, and customized because we believe that's how it should be. Sign up for free and get 20% off our accessibility programs.
Introducing Peptide Vite. It's the first daily natural vitamin to help support a reduction in the major side effects of GLP-1s. Peptide Vite supports fatigue, nausea, GI side effects, and promotes better metabolism. It is third-party tested, made in the USA, in an FDA-certified facility. Peptide Vite is a game-changer all-in-one daily supplement. Pharmacist and physician formulated to be safe and effective. Use code PLUS20 for 20% off at zennutrients.com.
Say goodbye to restrictive weight loss methods and hello to Iveem, the number one prescriber of GLP-1 medications. GLP-1s curb cravings, stabilize blood sugar, increase energy, and balance A1C levels to regulate your body and kickstart your weight loss journey. Iveem is committed to making medical weight loss accessible, affordable, and customized because we believe that's how it should be. Sign up for free and get 20% off our accessibility programs.
Thank you. And my next question is, why are compounds available in shortage? And is it legally, available when it isn't a shortage?
Yeah, so and that really just comes down to the FDA part of the regulatory component. The FDA sets out guidelines on how things can be compounded, when they can be compounded, in addition to state guidelines and some of those other bodies who I was talking about, like the USP. But the FDA really controls a lot of what you can compound and when you can compound it. And the FDA pretty much says if the drug is on the FDA shortage list, it basically means it's unavailable. Not that it's not available, but it hits a shortage. It hits their official shortage list. And they then allow compounding pharmacies to help make up that shortage deficit while something is on the shortage list. So at that point, you can make, and we'll kind of get into a little bit into the weeds here on compounds, but the FDA then allows you to compound an exact copy of a branded drug if it's on the shortage list, because then that's helped at seeing that, that we're helping to bridge the gap on the shortage, if you will.
Right. Okay.
Which is why compound medications have been able to sort of slide into the GLP-1 space.
Yeah, because of all the shortages. Yeah. And I can imagine, like, I just can only imagine that this will continue. Like, I'm hoping that it will be short-lived, I of course, like, but I just, the demand is so high. It's so high. And for specifically Mounjaro, if they get approved, you know, for weight management, which we all think they will, you know, in Q4, then that's just a whole nother indication and more demand. They're going, oh, that is safe. That is good. The FDA says, okay, then, then I think that's something, you know, and also like in terms of being in the weeds, like this is for sure the episode for the weeds of the compound pharmacy. So have at it, Dr. Ripley. We would love all your, our listeners definitely want this.
Yeah, and you can go to you can Google FDA shortage list. The FDA publishes it and updates it all the time. You can go in and see, it's not just GLP-1s that are on there. You know, there's a big shortage of ADHD and stimulant meds like that. There's stuff that
antibiotics.
Goes on, antibiotics, stuff that goes on and off those lists all the time. So it's a it's a living, breathing document, and you can anybody can go check out and see what's on, when it's on, when and why it's on there.
And
what's
why?
Super. Sorry.
Go ahead, Dr. Rosen. No, you go ahead. No, go
I
ahead.
Was just going to say that what's super interesting and I think novel about what's happening now in the GLP-1 space, which probably did not happen before, is that it's not really the medication that's in shortage in this instance. Rather, it's the supply chain involved in these complicated delivery mechanisms that these medications were sort of branded and packaged in order to facilitate easy delivery of the medication. So the companies sort of built themselves a trap by creating complicated delivery systems that then they were unable to ramp up to meet demand, because production of the medication itself is not nearly as limiting, because you can just make it in mass, but you have to make each of these pens, you know, in a factory, and that is really what can't keep up with demand. So you have a medication that's in shortage, but without a true shortage of that medication, it's the delivery system of that medication. And so compound pharmacies are able to come in and utilize that excess medication that isn't packaged. So when people say, like, well, where do you get that medication? The company says it's not from us. We're not delivering that medication. Well, what's actually happening is Novo Nordisk doesn't make their semaglutide. Like they may have developed it and, you know, configured it in the lab and then tested it, you know, made a batch and tested it. But when it comes to mass production of things, they tend to outsource to subcontractors, typically in India or China. The mass production of these precursors and medications that then they have in a different facility, contracting facilities just shut down, right? It's like they still have production lines they want to keep open. They still have employees they want to employ. Yeah. And so they're kind of building up this product, waiting for the big drug companies to buy it off of them. And it's completely conceivable that because the FDA allows compound pharmacies to distribute it, or produce it, they can buy these precursor medications and then distribute it. It's kind of like, you know, a designer handbag company that during the day they make, you know, labeled items, and at night they make the same handbag but don't affix the name brand label, and it goes out in trucks and it's distributed
on Canal
it's
Street.
The same on Canal Street.
Right on Canal Street.
It might be the bag. It might be the very same handbag, but one is branded and one is not, because that factory wants to produce as much product as it can.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a economic driving force.
That's a really good.
Wow.
Interesting was that recently Eli Lilly announced that the Mounjaro and Trulicity pens are the same device. They use the same internal components. And so as Mounjaro drives more and more demand, there's going to be a shortage of Trulicity coming as well, because it's the same pen. And then they also issued a report saying that they have a third-party manufacturer, like Dr. Rosen was saying, that does all of their peptide production in Europe, brings it in, and then they basically assemble this together, put it together in their factory, and then package it up and send it out. So,
oh my gosh.
The supply chain issue that's holding everything up seems to be these pens, and the pens have like a mechanism to basically shoot out the medication without any kind of like electronic components or anything. So that's the whole issue.
Spring loaded.
Yeah.
But
I gotta say, I've used them all, and I think the one that's basic is just as easy. It's just as easy. Let's save the environment. One pen.
Well, what's super interesting is you see the way that these pharmaceutical companies manipulate the narrative.
Yeah, for sure they do.
In order to demonize, you know, they don't want anyone using compound medications because it takes sales away from them.
Yeah.
So in order to sow distrust over the medication, they're not going to like get into the nitty gritty of the fact that it's their subcontractors that are selling excess medication through other channels. They're just going to say, we have not provided compound pharmacies with our medication, which is technically true, but it serves to, you know, invalidate the source of safe medication that compound pharmacies could possibly be delivering to patients.
Right.
So when you get these medications and they're not like matched, you know, dose for dose. So like if I get semaglutide versus getting Ozempic, and I do 0.25 of Ozempic, and then I say I get some sort of milliliters or a different type of dose, like because they've added in B12 or something. One, why do they do that? Like I'm sure there's a reason. And two, like, how do I know what it is I'm actually getting? Is this kind of going back to like, make sure it's got your name on it and things like that? Cause I feel like there's a lot of misconception around that. And I also think there's some people that are exploiting others by giving them not as much of the medication. Like maybe they're not giving them the 0.25 of the medication totally. They're giving them like less, you know, and then to keep them from having side effects. Like we're seeing that with some compound or some med spas and things like that. They're really doing things in a bad way and giving, in fairness, compound pharmacy a bad name, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, what's up with that?
I think Dr. Rosen touched on it a little earlier, and it's a pet peeve of mine too. It's everything that should come out of a pharmacy should be labeled with the strength and the dose, how many milligrams, how many mLs per ml is it, and what's your dose. And and I think too many people, I see too many people get caught up in, well, my sister's using 2 units and I'm using 4 units.
Right.
Well,
sometimes I see what you're saying.
It depends on where you're getting it from, who's making it, what the concentration is. So if the two, you know, in that example, you know, Susie may be doing 2 units and her sister's doing 4 units, but if they're getting it from 2 different places and they're making it 2 different ways, they may be getting exactly the same dose. So people get caught up on units
and milliliters and units.
It needs to be institutionalized. Like we need to make it from this podcast out to the community that when you talk about your dosage, you talk about it in milligrams.
That's
milligrams delivered,
not
milligrams of medication in whatever volume you're taking. So when people tell me like my dose is 20 ml, I'm like, no, you know, that's not your dose. That's the volume your dose is delivered in.
Think about it like milk, right? Like fat-free milk, you're going to get no fat. If you're getting 3% milk, that is a very high fat content.
Love that.
So if you're trying to get the same amount of fat content in your milk, you're going to have different amounts of milk.
Yeah. Oh, that's fascinating.
And thank you. Yeah, so many different medical conferences where even the physicians are teaching it in units, and there's like give your patients 4 units, give your patients 2 units, and you really got to go back and really kind of unlearn a lot of people, and it's what's your dose, how many milligrams, and then don't get caught up in the amount that you're getting in terms of the amount of fluid that is in, because it may be irrelevant when it comes to the dose that you need, because it may be different than, what somebody else is getting down the street.
And the follow up on that question of when you have a question is you should always be able to either contact your prescriber or contact your pharmacy. And if you can't do either of those things, then you shouldn't take it.
Yeah. You shouldn't take it.
And if you can't get a straight answer, or you don't feel like you're getting a straight answer, that's another red flag that you're not in the right spot.
Great. Good.
I love answers.
That
was one of our questions, because we're seeing in the conversations on social media, I've got this amount of units or this amount of milliliters. So it's not consistent across the board. And that leads me to my last question of when you're using a compound pharmacy. For our last question for me is, what should you be, looking for when researching a compound pharmacy? And, and in terms of compound salts, why are they so dangerous?
So like certifications, you mean?
That's two totally different questions.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, start with the first one.
Look, my bad.
Right. I think a lot of it goes back to I think some of my the thoughts on who's regulating pharmacies, and going when you start looking at compounding pharmacies, I think a good place to look is from the accreditation standpoints. What national boards or what national organizations are they accredited by? There's several. The NABP, National Association Board of Pharmacy, does some accreditations. PCAB, PCAB, Pharmacy Compounding Association Boards. I think that's the right acronym. What all the letters stand for.
Do they have a website?
Yep. Do they have a website? Can you Google them? When you pick up the telephone, are you talking to somebody? Almost every state has a pharmacy license registration. You can look them up by the state. I think a great place to start, just from trying to find the ones that might stand out from the crowd, might be a better option, or to look, or to kind of start with that accreditation piece and then kind of work from there. Because the accreditation bodies will take all of that other information, the state board requirements, the USP requirements, the FDA requirements, and they'll put them into that certification compliance mold there, so that if they have those certifications, then from those national bodies, that's a great indicator that they are on the up and up, and probably head and shoulders above somebody who's not doing it that particular way.
Awesome.
And let me start the conversation about semaglutide salts, and Dr. Myra and Dr. Ripley Fields, please jump in.
Please, thank you.
There's clearly the message put out there that semaglutide salt is some sort of bad thing, as if it's poison.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's for sure what it sounds like.
As if there's semaglutide and then there's semaglutide salt, and one is a lower caliber of the other. Yes. And I don't think that any semaglutide that is manufactured and distributed to patients wasn't at some point a semaglutide salt. I'm going to put that out there.
Okay.
Because as far as I understand things, and I may be wrong, making a salt version of a medication is a way that you can transport that medication as a powder in a stable, non-reactive situation. Like table salt is a salt. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. not highly reactive. It can sit in a jar. Nothing happens to it. But when you add water to it, the sodium comes off the chloride ion, and then it's you get different ions with different properties, like hydrochloric acid and sodium hydroxide, you know? And so a salt is just a stable way to have a medication. And I would suspect that any medication that's branded at some point in its production life was mm-hmm. a salt. And I think that it was sort of put out there that compounds are using salts, because I suspect they are, prior to the the dilution of that medication and that preparation of that medication, whether it's with sterile water or saline, it is in a salt form. But the same exact thing is happening in the branded medication. I was wondering if either of you could comment on that.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Wow.
So I think maybe sometimes when you're saying with salts, because my first perception of that is you think table salt. And so you're mm-hmm. immediately thinking, oh, it's not safe. That's, you know,
or bath salts, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's too. You went there.
But, yeah. My brain's going to reconstitution. Like my brain's going, okay, it's salt. And then you add water and like that, you know, like, I don't know, because I don't do compound. If I have to, I would like, but
yeah.
Yeah, I think that's something that we're sick. We need medicine. There's nothing wrong with that, you know? But if you, like, when I hear salts, and this is just like typical social media bullshit, I'm just gonna say it, right? Like you hear these things and things start rolling and like, let's talk about what the actual truth is. So that makes a lot of sense to me, that when you have something that you're trying to ship, like, especially if it's from like another country or store, like for a long period of time to be able to then use it in its active form, that you would have it like that. But do we want to be receiving it as a salt? I think that's probably the question, is like, when you get your from your compound pharmacy, am I going to open up and see salts that I'm going to have to mix together? You know, is that what I need to stay away from? And it sounds like from our earlier conversation, perhaps.
Yeah.
So tell me more. I think
that's where the danger comes in, because that salt form never went through clinical trials the same way that Ozempic and Wegovy did. And so we know what Ozempic and Wegovy do in your body, and we have a fairly good understanding of the cytoprofile there, but we don't know that for the salt form. So
makes more sense.
But Dr. Ripley, when you add water or saline to the salt form, doesn't it become semaglutide, indistinguishable from any semaglutide that you would have?
Yeah, I think that's the thought process, and I think
yourself your semaglutide salt, which hasn't been studied. You're actually, once it's reconstituted, you're giving yourself semaglutide.
Yeah, and I think that kind of goes back a little bit to what Dr. Myro had mentioned, that, you know, in theory, yes, but that's not what was in the studies, and that's not what was studied. So, you know, could you say that with 100% certainty? No, you really couldn't, because that's not how it was studied. But from a chemical standpoint, could you argue it from a chemical reaction? Here's what happens when you add water. It's going to get rid of that sodium salt molecule that's on it, and it's going to cleave it off, and you're going to end up with semaglutide. Yeah, from a chemical standpoint, probably. I think more from a what we know, what we can prove, and what's been proven. I think maybe we really just don't know. We don't know
that the semaglutide in the study wasn't a semaglutide salt before it was reconstituted and injected.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
That's a great question, because the way, and honestly, I don't know the answer. I don't know the direct answer to that, because I know when you have, let's say, when you have compounded semaglutide, when you're making a semaglutide from a semaglutide, or you're getting it from Wegovy, they're using the base form, not the salt form, of semaglutide. And you can get semaglutide sodium, or you can get semaglutide that doesn't have the salt attached to it, and you can make a solution in either way. I don't know, when you go back and you start looking at all the studies, did they only use that? Was it a salt at some point? That I don't know.
Fascinating. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that makes sense. It's just like you said, it's like grabbing onto that all salts are bad is not necessarily a thing, but maybe all salts, if you were having to mix things up, which we've already decided is probably not a best practice from our experts here, you know, doing anything on your own is probably not the best thing. Yeah. So
in general, we talk when we're talking about chemistry, salt forms are a very important part of, you know, medicine in general. There's a lot of things that are in salt forms that you take. And it can do anything from, you know, the adding the salt form increases or making it a salt form can increase one drug's absorption. And it may be how that's therapeutic is that it may be a salt form where the base form gets degraded in the body and doesn't, it never gets to the target cells. It can change flavor profiles. It can make it more or less water soluble. So I think, you know, from a, you know, a chemical standpoint, and salt forms in itself aren't bad. It's just a matter of, you know, when you're looking at compounded semaglutide, and I think where a lot of the bad press started coming from on semaglutide salts was, I think some of the thought process early was, well, there's semaglutide salt out there and it's okay to compound with, and that gets some of the compounding pharmacies maybe around some of the FDA regulations and that kind of stuff. And I think that's where,
and that's wrong. Because, I mean, it's a leap that you'd think someone would make. But if you look at the patents for semaglutide, they also include semaglutide salt, semaglutide in a base form, semaglutide in an ester form. So it's not any way to like skirt patent protections.
I see what you're saying.
I see. Okay.
They wouldn't know that because they probably haven't read the patent paperwork for semaglutide.
Yeah. When they're
whatever
talking
whatever you do, if you get semaglutide that says not for human consumption, that's probably not something you should be injecting.
And what is that, y'all? Where's that coming from? Is that like from the studies they were using on the rats that got the bad things? Like, what is it?
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
Who else is going to consume it? I don't understand.
They're still doing research on all of this stuff. There is still chemicals that exist for research use.
I think in a simple term, semaglutide and a lot of these other peptides are small molecules. They're pretty easy to synthesize in a lab. And there's a lot of lab companies out there who can form a business that is not regulated by the FDA if they call it a research grade peptide. And it's quite frankly, it's very easy for them to make. It's very easy for them to test it. It's very easy for them to show you, hey, it's 100 or 99.7% semaglutide, whatever it is. But basically what it comes down to is they figured out that little loophole that they can run a business, call it a research grade peptide, and it doesn't go through the FDA. It doesn't go through any other state board regulations.
Yeah.
You're basically signing off as a patient or as a consumer saying, yeah, I'm fine. I'm doing my own research, and they have to call it research grade. And then you did run into, you know, you got bad apples in every profession. You run into
sure,
you know, compounding pharmacies or even, you know, offices, med spas, physicians, whatnot, using the not for human use, the research grade as their what they were putting in their compounded semaglutide, basically because it was cheap.
Yeah. Right, because it's going to come cheaper because they don't have to go through all of the hoops that a compound pharmacy truly does, or that a factory producing semaglutide for human consumption has to do. And it's brilliant because think about the way it offloads liability, right?
Yeah,
so
for sure.
This isn't this what Dr. Ripley's saying is this isn't like someone taking a jar of semaglutide for a rat study and like stealing it and then selling it to a doctor's office. These are companies that are making semaglutide to capitalize on the demand. And by putting a label on it that says not for human consumption, they get around having to be accredited to make semaglutide for human consumption. And then if there's any problem that a human being develops from ingesting that semaglutide, they have automatic protection from liability because they'll say, well, we labeled it as not for human consumption and you consumed it. So anything bad that happened to you, we can't be held liable. So they can completely shift all liability. So it's a brilliant way to sort of, exactly like you said, get around the system and exploit a loophole in the system where they don't have any oversight and they escape all liability. So it's super shady black market from that perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you got to, you also got to think about, you know, from a safety perspective, you're talking about you're going to reconstitute it at home, which we already covered that pitfall. Yep. And then you're trusting the runaround people to assure that you're getting a sterile product. There's no supervision. There's no oversight to show that it's a sterile product. So you're just starting to compound, or probably a better term, or you're starting to kind of see where a lot of those layers of risk start coming in.
Like those ones you mentioned earlier.
Or reconstituting at home, and just a lot of unnecessary risk just to save a few bucks.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much stuff going out there. I think this clears a lot of things up. I think that's really interesting too, what you said about like looking on the label, like the fact that it should say like the units. I want everybody to remember this going forward, because if you're in my live, I'm going to point you to this episode, and because you know you will. But if you come here, because I think that people don't realize what it is. A lot of this is because nobody tells people. Like, you get this medication, whether your doctor prescribes it for you or you decide to go to a med spa or something. Like, there's not. That's why the community is so big and so popular. It's because there's not enough like direct oversight. There's not enough obesity specialists. There's not, you know, enough bariatric doctors. There just aren't. Like, it's not really available. And so people are having to get all this information. So I hope that like what we've provided here today would, you know, give people a little more know-how when they're making those decisions. I had one last question, and I think we may have touched on it in like a corner, you know, but we hear a lot of like gym bros using semaglutide peptides. What's the difference in the things we're talking about and peptides? Like, what equals peptides? Because I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, peptide is just a string of amino acids, if I remember my
semaglutide is a peptide. Tirzepatide is a peptide. Okay. All of these fall under the category of
peptide. Insulin is a peptide.
Right.
Okay.
We could talk about AOD 9604, right? Yeah. That's a peptide.
Can we? I don't know. What is that? Tell me about AOD 9604.
It's a peptide. It's a peptide. Okay. It's a peptide that was developed by a pharmaceutical company. About 20 years ago. It's a insulin is made from proinsulin, right? Proinsulin is a peptide, and it just means it's longer than insulin with other stuff on it. And then the body cleaves it, meaning it divides that peptide into smaller pieces. And sometimes the piece that gets broken off has its own activity. Okay. So then you have insulin, and then you have the thing that came out off of the insulin. And AOD 9604 is a peptide that is a portion of human growth hormone. They were doing a lot of research in human growth hormone. Obviously, it was used in the 70s in bodybuilding a lot. And people theorized that a portion of it also broke down fat. It caused lipolysis. And they specifically were looking for a medication as an obesity treatment that would burn fat but not add muscle, you know, which would be like a reconstituted human growth hormone would do. So how do you just take the part of human growth hormone that burns fat without the building muscle part and then use that for people suffering from obesity? It would be like a magic pill that would cause them to start metabolizing their fat. And they developed it and they synthesized it and they tested it on rats, and boom, it worked. Like, these rats lost 20% of their weight on AOD 9604. And then they rolled it out for early phase human trials, and they were able to prove no impact on humans. And one of the main reasons is because the rat receptor for AOD64, or for the the lipolysis part of human growth hormone is different than the human version of that. And so the impact that it had on rat brain was not replicatable on human brain.
Interesting.
And so the company gave up on the medication. Okay. And they stopped producing it, and the patent ran out. Mm-hmm. And so people are able to synthesize this peptide because peptides can be synthesized relatively easy in laboratories. And so they synthesize this peptide, and then they capitalize on this one rat study. And they tell people it's a magic drug to help you burn fat. And for anyone who claims that it helps build muscle, because some people are using it in gym bros will swear by it, but it was specifically designed to not build muscle.
Yeah.
Like that was part of its planned design.
Is it related to what I always think of the gym bros also talking about the human growth hormone, the HGH?
It's not related to HCG.
Okay.
That's human chorionotropic hormone.
Whew, okay.
Human gonadotropic. I'd have to look it up, but it's definitely not HGH, which is human.
Not the same thing. Good. You got it. Yeah.
Not the same thing. If you look on the internet, you can find the person who developed this compound for the company saying like, these are black market distributors. They have no relation to the company. The company is not making this medication or this peptide in any form of production right now. And he was saying like, I feel bad for all these people who are being fooled. Because like we've done the studies and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same goes.
The good news is it doesn't really hurt you. It doesn't really hurt you.
What were you saying, Dr. Myra?
The same goes for tesmorelin, which is like the HIV lipodystrophy drug, which is supposed to help with, a lot of people are saying it can be mixed in with semaglutide or tirzepatide for weight loss. It's been tested for weight loss. It's used for HIV-associated lipodystrophy, which is when HIV patients have an abnormal fat distribution change.
Okay.
And it's supposed to help normalize that fat distribution, and it works and is FDA approved for that use case. There is no evidence that anybody's been able to find that it helps independently with weight loss or helping redistribute weight in other people without this HIV-associated lipodystrophy. So.
Okay.
Wow. Yep, and there's a whole cottage industry out there now with the gym bros kind of leading the charge on where our technology.
Who are the gym bros, by the way? I'm
sorry. You don't know the gym bros?
The gym bros, yeah.
Wait, are they like a workout podcast?
Oh yeah. So, do you even lift, bro? That's an actual.
Wait a minute.
Instagram handle.
The gym bros. You're in New York, Dr. Rosen. You don't know gym pros?
I mean, are they like a chain? Is this a workout chain? I have no idea.
No.
I swear
to God.
Like
the group of people who like
gym
bros.
Yeah.
Oh, gym bros just guys who like to go to the gym?
Yeah.
Okay. Because it sounded to me like they were pushing a bunch, like they were selling these compounds, like they were selling these peptides. No, as you can see, like, I'm not a gym bro, clearly.
There's a lot of covert selling and stuff that happens at the gyms too. So,
yeah.
Wow.
I think from a technology standpoint, just a quick peptide, we're able to make so many of these small 2, 3, 5 amino chain peptides that either can or theorized to trigger certain genes, certain processes, whether it's weight gain or fat loss or whatever it is. And I think that's why you're starting to see it blow up more in a lot of your research grade only areas. We've been able to synthesize these much smaller molecules to have a certain target, and they'll take advantage, like Dr. Rosen, of one study that was done or one thing that might show this or might show that. And we can make those things now. You can make them in a lab, and you can turn around and sell them for research grade. And you kind of see all kinds of different peptides, all kinds of different combinations geared toward anything, everything in the gym. At the gym, gym nowadays, just because we can make it where we couldn't do it 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. No. So that's why it seems like they're just like coming up out of the woodwork.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because they're pretty easy to make now. You just need to buy like a couple fancy lab machines and you can churn them out anywhere.
Yeah. Well, that'll be the first thing that any, if someone ever says to me, well, I don't know, making peptides is kind of easy. Like we can mix it at home. I'm going to be like, no, that's the whole problem. Like, stop it. Go watch episode 19.
Sounds like Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad for like the 2020s.
Thank you.
Yeah. Right.
It's like a peptide lab in your trailer home.
Yeah. Don't do that.
I've been saying that. It's giving Breaking Bad vibes.
Yeah, totally. For sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I think it's important. Like, and we had Dr. Toomer, Dr. Catherine Toomer on one of our episodes. I can't remember which one. And she mentioned that that compound pharmacies were so important that she, and she was very specific about like all of these things that we're talking about, like why those things were important, but there is such a big need for them. And so I guess what my question is we need to wrap things up, obviously. But for right now, with everything with the shortage, and I think that it seems like there's going to be intermittent shortages like this for a while. If someone's taking a compound medication and then it comes off shortage, how long can they expect to continue to keep getting that medication? Before will they have to like immediately stop? Or if the company that's then providing it or the compound pharmacy that's providing it, like what does that future look like for them when that changes?
I'll jump in. Of course he will.
When in doubt.
We don't know is the short answer. Okay. I think that.
It's an answer. I got it.
You know, I think that we'll have to find out. Meaning that, of course, you don't have to stop taking the medication right away.
Right.
Like no one's going to be in your house telling you what you can or can't do.
Right.
And I think that compound pharmacies will continue to try and obtain the medication and to distribute the medication based on prescriptions written for patients. At some point, Novo Nordisk or Eli Lilly will sue these compound pharmacies for patent violation.
Okay.
And then there will be some sort of trial. That's my prediction that this will have to be tested in a court of law in order to be enforced in any real way. Because if you try and enforce the patent laws when these medications are off shortage, then pharmacies will assert that they're modifying these medications or that doctors need to give these medications in smaller incremental doses, not in the 0.25, 0.5, 0.75, 1.0 aliquots. I have patients who are so sick on a 2.5 Mounjaro, but they're just right on a 0.8.
Wow.
And so you can't do that without a compound pharmacy giving you that opportunities. And so I think eventually it'll be litigated and that's going to be a whole long road and we'll just have to wait and see. But for people who are worried about their medications being taken away in a flash, I don't think it's going to happen like that. I don't think you need to stockpile a year worth of meds in your fridge.
Okay.
You know, that's my take.
Dr. Lipp says no. Yeah.
That's how I feel as well.
No. I think that's it. You kind of saw the same thing with a lot of the other peptides that kind of blew up on the compounding pharmacy world for a while. And then it took a while for things to kind of wind down. It took a few FDA warning letters and a few FDA whatnots with different compounding pharmacies to get in and to kind of push to push it in one direction or the other. And it's typically a very slow process. It's not a light switch type thing. Usually it's
a minute. Things in the government are slow. That's mad.
Imagine that. I agree. Nobody's going to turn the light switch off and everybody quits making it tomorrow and you all go home like Fred Flintstone at 5 o'clock. It'll take a while to iron itself out.
Okay. All right. Well, this was a lovely conversation. Thank you guys for joining us and helping educate our community. We appreciate it so much.
Wow.
Any closing thoughts before I exit you? Stage left or right? Or left.
No, thank you guys so much for having me.
Yes. Thanks so much for coming, everyone. Really appreciate it.
And this was great. And it was a great opportunity and a great conversation
yes.
with colleagues and really important people in the community doing important work, yes, educating and advocating. So keep, yes, doing what you're doing.
Oh, you're welcome. I was thinking about you guys, but that's sweet. Thank you.
I know, right? We appreciate what you guys are doing as well.
Yes. We're so thankful for you. I feel like
from the pharmacist perspective, I'd say talk milligrams.
Yeah. Talk milligrams.
Talk milligrams.
That's what I'm going to say every time. It's like, Dr. Ripley says.
Talk milligrams.
Yes. Awesome. All right. Thank you guys so much. Thank I hope you all. Have a wonderful evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, my Virgo. Oh, that was so great. God, I learned so much.
I will be listening to this again because I need to take notes.
I think that I can do like a descript, which is like, I can like have everything scripted.
Yeah.
And then like edit it accordingly. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think I can do that because I think all of the, specifically the like, I think when we're talking, that's about the peptides, but we're talking about like the certifications and like certain, and I want to make sure we have those like written out for people, mm-hmm, because there are people that will want to, you know, really geek out on that and like understand. I'm sure we're some of them. So mm-hmm, yeah, but I think it's important. I got a lot of things clarified and I know a lot of people in the community have asked me those questions. So I think
misconceptions were cleared up.
A lot of misconceptions.
Whenever I hear salts, I think of like what Dr. Rosen said, bath salts, but I'm thinking of like a witch's cauldron putting in her salt stuff. Like it's just, that's the immediate.
Or I'm thinking like crystals, like I'm thinking like freaking bad situation, like, you know, and that's the thing is like, hear this narrative, we hear these spins. And I think Dr. Rosen makes a really good point that like, we're hearing certain things from, you know, from the manufacturers, right? Or we're hearing from like, you know, Eli Lilly, right? And they're saying, oh, like, we don't want to do that. Oh, blah, 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 you know? And
right.
And I think, but why are we listening to them again? I forget. Like, because clearly they have, you know, they want to make money and all the things. But I thought it was really fascinating.
They just made the medication.
But, yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I know.
Oh, yeah. Right? And then how they shot themselves in the foot by creating this vehicle to.
Yeah. Well, I love the Canal Street reference.
Yeah,
that was a good one.
Reference.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. That little guy right there. Yeah.
Look, yeah. This little thing right here.
That's the fault. It's not diabetes versus obesity.
Exactly. Exactly, Kat. It's not diabetes versus obesity. It's not.
It's the dang pen.
It's the stupid pen. Let's go back to one pen. Although let's face it, like they had a problem with Ozempic even with one pen. So I think it just seems to be, and that makes sense why they're spending so much time. I think we are seeing in the newest studies of like figuring out how to optimize the oral ones, right? How do we get, you know, the optimal doses from like the oral and what kind of, that's what Dr. Meyer has done several videos about that recently.
Well, they're easier to produce.
Yeah. Because they're easier to produce. You don't have to worry about that raw material. Well, I don't want to say raw materials because that's stuff in the medication, but you don't have to worry about the pens, right? The actual, you know, physical things. So I think that's something to consider going forward. And like, as long as it worked well, as long as it was the same medication and I could tolerate it and it was, you know, I would do it, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I hope this helps people feel a little bit more clear and at least they'll know what questions to ask and red flags and things to look for.
Yeah.
If they are in a situation and to be clear, like, I just want to make sure everybody understands because I know how the girls feel about this. But we want everybody to have access to this medication affordably. Mm-hmm. We would love for everyone to take the retail, which is what Jernine came up with, a really way to take the retail. But we know that not everybody can. We know that most people can't. We know that that is the lack of accessibility and affordability is a really big problem. And I mean, for sure, these, like, I don't want to say designer meds, but I've heard someone say that recently, these medications, right? Mm-hmm. These very expensive medications, they shouldn't just be for the elite, you know, or the lucky. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But we know. But if you are able to find access to these medications in a safe way, and you are able to afford them at least a little bit more, then I hope that this does help you because we want everyone to be safe and to be healthy. And as long as you're able to do that, you will always see resources from the plus sides. We will always give you can choose which ones you use, but we will always give you resources. Okay. So I thought it was a lovely discussion. Even though I have like my new mic, I feel like I could get a little crazy with going in and out like this. It's a good time, you know, like
your special effects.
I'm getting my mic this week because I need a mic.
You do need a mic. You need one special for your iPad, right?
I'm going to see if I can find a pink one.
Oh, cute.
Mm-hmm, I'm Barbie sure pink. You can.
I'm sure you can, Trinine. If anybody can find 100%. A pink mic, it's you. You and Delta Barbie.
Yeah. Pink and Delta Barbie.
Yes.
You're going to be chilling over here.
Yeah, you're going to have to wear head things like me and look silly. That's how it works.
Not silly. I think I want one of those.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. My hair looks real flat, you know? And like, I'm from Georgia. I need some bigger hair. I'm in Texas, but I need it up there, you know? The higher hair, the closer to heaven. You know, I need a little puffier. It's like.
Yeah. Yep. I'm hold back in my man bun.
Yeah. It's not a man bun if you're wearing a cat.
Right. It's a man bun. I know, right?
Bun. It's a cat bun.
Because I need a haircut so badly, but.
You know what I was thinking we should do? We should do non-scale victories sometimes when we do our sign-offs. You know, like, hey, what was your NSV this week? You know, stuff like that. You know, do you guys have any? Because we could do it today if you wanted. Danger.
See.
I don't know.
Oh.
Okay, I'm listening.
I went to Zara this week.
What's Zara? I don't even know what Zara is.
Zara at Lenox Square Mall.
Okay.
And because the Barbie movie premiered this weekend, I was able to purchase one of the like Barbie t-shirts in a size medium.
That's great. That's totally an NSV. I love it.
Thank you. I was excited.
I need to see a picture of that. I need to see a picture of it. What about Kat? Have you had one lately?
You know, I'm pretty sure I have, but it's been kind of a whirlwind this week. It's been quite a bit nutty. But I'll think of one for next week. Okay. But
yeah,
you guys, we've always talked about how I don't have a Prince quote.
Yes, so
I have one today.
You have a Prince quote today, okay? In lieu of the NSV.
In lieu of the NSV, I actually thought of this. So it's called a deep track from Prince. However much you want. He did with his then wife, Maite.
Okay.
Or were they married? I don't know. Anyway, who cares? The lyrics were pretty awesome. I'm full of random useless pop culture information, not just about Prince either. You know, sidebar, Kim, when I worked at Career Builder, when you were there, one of my teams that I worked in, they said Kat is the best popular culture referencer ever. So that was my award. So,
wow. Okay.
Anyway.
All right.
All right. So,
that's an NSV.
How much can you get if you don't how much can you get if you just put your mind to it? Yeah. How much can you gain if you don't struggle to get through it? How strong is your faith if you don't take time to renew it? Listen now, you've got to make haste. This is the time. You've got to do it. And then, I had to do the Prince one. Anyway.
I love it.
However much you want.
That's the song. I love it.
However much you want.
Mm-hmm. I had an NSV. I had a few NSVs. I'm having a lot since Manjaro. Shocking. I know. We're all so shocked. But mine is now I want a blanket statement. My husband has always thought I was fine, but he's never seen me this small. Ever. Like, and all the year, we've been together 20 years. He's never seen me this small. And I was just standing in the kitchen wearing basically my clothes are kind of like the ones I was wearing, kind of hanging off me, but I don't care. I'm at home, you know? And he came over and he goes, you're just glowing. I've just never seen you this small and this beautiful. And I always thought you were, he loves me no matter what size I am. Like, I've always had to beat his ass off with a stick, but you know, it was just like, I could see it in his face, like how into me he was. Wow. And that made me, and like, again, he loves me in every size, but it was very cool in that moment to see that, know that my partner and my bestie, right, has never seen me as healthy as I am now. And he's known me since I was 20, you know? So it's like, it was a cool thing. It was a nice NSV, I thought.
That's sweet.
Yeah, totally.
That's really sweet.
That's awesome.
Yes. So we won't do classic sign-offs. We'll just do that instead of our quotes. That's cool. Yeah, you gotta like at least add some up and just throw them in whenever. I don't know. I just thought it might be a little more fun since we always do our sign-ups, and I'm pretty sure if I look at the stats, people are like, eh, and they just leave.
No, look, gotta go.
Gotta go. Peace out. Yeah.
Well, that's why I anyway. Have the different one.
Yeah. That's good. You're the one anyway. That always shakes it up. We're just basic bitches over here, like with the sample stuff. It's all right. We're learning. We're evolving.
We ooh, aren't basic. That,
yeah, I think it's my undiagnosed basic, no. ADD in my life. That's all it is.
So. Yes.
All right. Well, we will sign off for the night. We will see you guys next week. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please comment, share, like all the things. If you have not subscribed, please do so. All of these things help. Please also know that we do have a page where if you want to make a donation to the podcast, you can. Many people have asked for that. There's a PayPal link that are in the notes and on the website. And also and we merch. Have a merch store. We have a merch store.
You want to get something in exchange for donating.
Yes. That's right. That's why we started that to begin with, because I feel super uncomfortable letting people donate to the podcast. But lots of people were like, please give us the space to do it. We want to do it. And it's very kind. It's very kind. Yes, we appreciate it so much. It really does help. Every little bit does help. So we're so thankful for you, community, and new members of our community, hopefully, that are watching and have been. We've gotten so many on YouTube that have found us that are new. And the audio podcast is taking off quite a bit as well. It was already pretty steady, but it's quite a bit now. I think we're probably at 2,000 downloads a week, you know? Ooh, so it's quite, yeah. So that's pretty good.
Awesome.
It grows by a couple hundred a week. It really does. So it's going really good. And then of course the YouTube grows like every hour. The YouTube is really getting up there. So we're doing good things, right? Do good things, get good things, help people. That's what we want to do. So help us in every way that you can with watching and sharing and engaging. All of those things help the plus sides. You don't have to go and buy something if you don't want to. You don't have to donate if you don't want to, but consuming the content and reacting and engaging with the content helps us significantly. So please do that. And if there are commercials, because we finally got some commercials, like just let them play.
Helps
yeah. us. Just, it helps us, you know, like it does. So we're so thankful for everyone. And thankful, of course, to our doctors. And we will see you guys next week. Hasta la pasta. Bye.
Bye. Time for a change rooted in lasting evidence-backed wellness. Say goodbye to unsustainable diet culture with Friday's Weight Management Program. A nationwide virtual care platform built to address your biology.
The reason why I started Fridays is that I noticed that patients with obesity are often improperly treated and told to eat less and move more. Well, the science is in, and we now know that obesity is a chronic medical condition like high blood pressure and diabetes, and that there are many factors, including your genetics, that play a role in the development of obesity. We understand this at Fridays, and that's why we make sure to order labs and specific medications that work with you and your biology.
We're revolutionizing weight management, steering clear of weight loss fads, and embracing a scientifically driven approach. Our program charts a path to a healthier you, leveraging evidence-based treatments, nutritional support, and a team of specialized clinicians dedicated to guiding you towards optimal health. We ensure swift appointment scheduling and provide a knowledgeable insurance team for handling prior authorizations for GLP-1 medication. Fridays will also provide safe, compounded GLP-1 medication alternatives with fair and industry-leading pricing. Our eligibility quiz will match you with the provider that corresponds with your medical needs. Go to joinfridays.com to begin your journey to a healthier you today.
Introducing Peptide Vite. It's the first daily natural vitamin to help support a reduction in the major side effects of GLP-1s. Peptide Vite supports fatigue, nausea, GI side effects, and promotes better metabolism. It is third-party tested, made in the USA, in a FDA-certified facility. Peptide Vite is a game-changer all-in-one daily supplement. Pharmacist and physician formulated to be safe and effective. Use code PLUS20 for 20% off at zennutrients.com.
Are you interested in understanding GLP-1 medications like Ozempic, Wegovy, or Mounjaro? Then join us on the Plus Sides, Cracking the Obesity Code, the groundbreaking podcast helping people change their lives one episode at a time. The Plus Sides podcast is a disruptor. We're breaking down barriers, smashing stereotypes, and sharing inspiring stories that'll leave you feeling informed and empowered. Join us every week to learn from doctors who are specialists around GLP-1 medications like Ozempic, Wegovy, or Mounjaro. They'll provide you with science and facts to validate these incredible stories. But that's not all. We'll also bring you the voices of the GLP-1 Mounjaro TikTok community, real people who face the challenges of obesity, related diseases and disorders, and discovered the incredible plus sides of GLP-1 medications. Our episodes are filled with heartwarming stories, laughter, and moments of triumph. You'll connect with our amazing community members who are reclaiming their health and experiencing their fullest lives. Are you ready to embark on a journey of discovery and empowerment? Tune in to The Plus Sides, Cracking the Obesity Code, and together we'll change the narrative around obesity and end the stigma. Subscribe now on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform and join our incredible community. Let's celebrate the plus sides of life together. The Plus Sides Podcast, because every story deserves to be heard, every life deserves to shine, and everyone deserves access to expert knowledge and medication. The Plus Sides Podcast. You're not alone. It's not your fault.